Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 215. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
That's me.
And we have two deep dives tonight. We're continuing our rewatch of the Rambo series with Rambo 3. And then we're going to finish the podcast with an in-depth review of It Chapter 2. We're going to go full spoilers on both films, so I would imagine a lot of people who would listen to this would be familiar with what it is anyways and most likely have seen Chapter 2. So I just feel like there's a lot to talk about when it comes to that film especially. So that's all we're covering tonight is these two films. So we're going to get right into it. I'll do the little intro here for Rambo 3. And Chris, I'm going to let you take the wheel because you saw this more recently and you actually took some notes. I saw you taking notes on Twitter.
I did.
Rambo 3, obviously the third film in the franchise, directed by Peter MacDonald, written by Sylvester Stallone and Sheldon Lettich. It was released May 25th, 1988, with a budget, according to Wikipedia, somewhere between $58 and $63 million. Which is kind of amazing to me, and did a box office of $189 million. Chris, take the wheel here. What the fuck are we dealing with?
I don't know. I really don't know. The premise here is that Colonel Troutman tries to recruit Rambo again for another special mission, this time in Afghanistan. He turns him down, and somehow Troutman is the one that was going in deep, and he gets caught. I make zero sense, but anyway, my first note from this is this movie starts out with like an underground stick fight where Rambo's fighting this like behemoth. They both have like these like I don't know, yard long sticks that they're whacking each other with. And I like my first note is what the hell is this series? because I don't know where the hell this is going. Like, you know, the first one is very much a commentary on post-traumatic stress disorder and, you know, kind of how we treat, treated our veterans kind of like shit. Two is this weird, like, pro USA, we're gonna save the people we left behind, but also like a weird, like it's a weird film, but it's just basically they turn Rambo into G.I. Joe, and that you know, that's the Rambo that everyone kind of knows, is this the bulked up cartoon hero. Three continues down that vein, but it's like this weird thing because it takes like 40 minutes before anything happens.
So it's been about a month for me, and that was like one of the big things I remember from when I watched. Like, I struggled to pay attention to this one because it is, I thought, really boring, and a lot of that has to do with like that opening 40 minutes where it's like trying to set everything up.
Like, it's more like there's the stick fight, which doesn't make any sense, and it's not even like an intriguing fight. Like, it's just a stick fight. Like, they're just fighting. It's not well shot. It's not well acted.
That's what he's like doing now. And right. I read an article, kind of about the whole series. Like, it randomly popped up on my Twitter in the last week, and it was like, this represents Rambo at his happiest. Like, he, you know, he's using his, like, you know, he's like a violent, like, killing machine, and he's using, like, he's taking out his violence in like a somewhat like productive, not super violent way.
Yeah, he's like living on this like with these monks. He does these fights, but he like any of his winnings he like gives to the monks. So like he's just fighting because he wants to fight.
He's living his best life.
Yeah. And
the article said, made a great point. It was like, hey, it could be worse. Like, look at Deer Hunter. Fucking Christopher Walken went back to Vietnam and is fucking doing Russian roulette. So, but But yeah, so like that's why I remember that stick fight thing and being like immediately like, oh man, and then he's like not like he's just kind of happy there, I guess. I mean, as close as Rambo has ever been to happy,
right?
And he doesn't want to go on this mission,
which for good reason. Like, what? Why are you pulling me into this thing that like it makes zero sense? Why are we going in there? What are we doing? We already had this war, which is really funny because Colonel Troutman gets caught by these Russians in Afghanistan, and he goes on this kind of rant where he's like, that the Russian commander is like, you know, we're going to beat you this time or whatever. We're going to beat these people. We're going to take over Afghanistan. We're going to get these natural resources. And like Troutman's like, yeah, well, there won't be a victory. Every day your war machines lose ground to a bunch of poorly armed, poorly equipped freedom fighters. The fact is that you underestimated your competition. If you studied your history, you know that these people have never given up to anyone. They'd rather die than be slaves to an invading army. You can't defeat a people like that. We tried. We already had our Vietnam. Now you're going to have yours. Which is just this crazy speech, considering that happened, like, this movie was, what, 30 years ago? 31 years ago?
Yeah.
And we have been, for the last 18 years, 19 years, in a war in Afghanistan.
And, yeah, it's, like, one of the things that this film accidentally got, like, it's, like, chillingly right. You know what I mean? You're like, yeah. Whoa. Like you didn't know it, I don't think. Like, but... Like, there's very few things that this movie gets right, in my opinion, and that was like, whoa.
Yeah, it's a great speech, but it's like the highlight of the film. Like, it's...
Yeah, like, it just...
So weird.
The movie, again, you know, tell me if I'm right on this, but from what I remember, it just takes so much time setting up who these people are, and Rambo getting to know them. And it's like, you look at Rambo 2, and it's just like... Or First Blood, whatever, the last one. And it's like, within like 10 minutes, we're in like...
Hey, they set up the premise.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Rambo, you want to go back to Vietnam? Not really. But you're in jail. You want to get out of jail? Yeah, we'll go back to Vietnam. Okay. And then they drop him in. He's in Vietnam. And like, he's doing some stealthy, like, cartoon military bullshit, running around like this military base. Like, he's doing shit. Like, something's happening. And this, it's like, he's just having dumb conversations. Like, here's one that I wrote down. So it was a great line. So, like, this one guy's like, you don't look like a soldier. It's like, okay, what the fuck does he look like? He's goddamn, he's certainly not a banker. Like, I don't know what the hell you expect this dude. But he's, like, going over this equipment, and he's, like, looking at the equipment that the government has given Rambo for this. And he's like, what's this? Rambo just like looks at him, and it's like one of those little like snap lights, like the glow sticks.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Blue light. Like, what's it do? Turns blue.
Like, I do remember that. That's actually a funny line. Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck is going on here? And then it's another 20 minutes of him like learning, you know, all about these Afghan people. That have, you know, lost their homes and are kind of living this nomadic life now as freedom fighters. They have like a group of women and children that you know, been displaced. He's like meeting with all of them, meeting with all the leaders, and then he plays goat or sheep football on a horse or something. I don't know. Makes no fucking sense. There's like a 5-minute scene of him riding a horse and them using like a sheep as a football. Like, and I don't know what it's there for. It's like, you're supposed to like, oh, he's learning to meet with these people, but Rambo's not like an emotive dude. Like, he's at his best when he's just doing military shit and like fucking stuff up. And here he's just like, he looks like a buffoon. Like, he really does.
And like, it just feels like we're spending so much time, like, getting all these people. And, like, a lot of the time, like, both the non-action and the action is, like, taking place in caves and shit. It's like, how is this, like, the biggest budgeted Rambo film? Like, this thing had a budget of like $60 million, and it feels like they were working on a shoestring budget to me, honestly. Like, yeah, there's parts where they bust out the action and it finally gets going and shit. But it's like, I just looked it up. Rambo First Blood Part 2 was a budget of $25 million, and it's wall-to-wall action and shit blowing up.
Yeah, and like this is like he's like sneaking around in the dark in the in like rocky terrain, and then they're like hanging out in caves, and there's like very minimal like big action. And it's funny because like I wrote down like so it's 40 minutes like these helicopters interrupt this this sheep football game and like massacre everybody, and it's like it's this very big set piece. Our helicopters is like destroying everybody. Rambo is running from cover to cover trying to get to this like this entrenched gun so he can like get fire on the helicopter and protect some of these people. And it's like then that ends, and then it's like 10 more minutes before anything happens again, because it's like, oh, now we got to go through like, oh well, that was bad, wasn't it? Let's we're all running for Pakistan now. You should come too. Like, we don't need this. Like, why can't it just like, all right, fuck it. Now I'm angry. Let's go.
Yeah.
And then he gets angry, and then it's like there's this pretty cool scene that takes place at night in this Russian base. There's a lot of like sneaking around, and there's some like good corridor shots because like it's, you know, the prison is kind of underground in this cool looking like sand base or whatever. But then like that ends, and then it's like another 20 minutes before anything else happens. Like, just everything is drawn out in this film.
Yeah, it's a drag, which is like really weird because this is like the peak. It's this peak 80s. This is like the peak of like this series. Well, in my opinion, the peak is like this series became what First Blood Part 2 had turned it into, but it's like this is just such a boring entry in what it became. Like,
yeah,
it's just like everything you're describing, and you can walk us through the rest of the plot, but it's like it's all really foggy to me. Like, I don't really remember the helicopter part. Like, and I know it's like probably one of the big parts of the movie. Honestly, like, all I remember, like, I do remember them running around, like, you know, in like these small quarters and caves and shit, trying to save Troutman. And I remember there's like a part where he like cauterizes. I think it's like his wound, or I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Like,
so, I guess the kid gets shot or something, and so they're trying to protect the kid, and in the process, Rambo gets hurt. So he ends up sending off like his buddy and the kid to, you know, to their own. He's going to go back and fuck shit up. But before he can do that, he needs to like stem the bleeding. And I remember this as a kid, like it horrifying me. Now it just looks ridiculous. I don't know what he did. I don't know if he like set up like black powder, gunpowder along his wound. He lights it on fire. So it just looks like he's like shooting fireworks off of himself. And then he uses like an arrow, and he cauterizes like another piece. Like, I don't know, but that scene takes like 5 or 6 minutes. It's long. Like, it's like, what the fuck is going on? And it's not like the scene in First Blood where, you know, he's kind of wild himself away in the cave. This is before the Sunday Warriors show up and shoot the rocket launcher and close the mine. It's like he's still not known where he is, and he's like having this like talk with Troutman. Like, there's some tension there. There's this feeling of like, you know, they're closing in on him, but he's a dangerous beast. In this one, it's like, my God, like, when are you going to go do something cool? Because this is it.
It's funny you mentioned that like cave scene in First Blood, the original film, and it's like that I watched even longer ago now, and I remember that clearly. And this like film, I remember so little of it. Again, I feel like I was distracted, maybe looking at my phone a little bit, which is like me being doing bad homework here. But
no, but you know what? This film, like, so I sat down to watch this film, and here's a note that I wrote down: got up and did something for 20 minutes in the same room the movie was on.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I missed anything.
And it's like, it felt like you were helping yourself pay attention to it by like live tweeting it a little bit too,
right, which
is probably what I should have done. If I, that would have maybe helped me like stick with it a little more.
But even
like
with that,
but then you're looking at Twitter and you're like, oh, there's shit going on.
Right. And I still got up and did something for 20 minutes because it's just that bad. Like, it's so boring. And finally, he rescues Troutman. And then there's this big standoff. And I don't know, it makes zero sense. Like, Troutman is standing there. He looks like he's never held a gun in his life, which is weird because they've sent him behind enemy lines into a combat zone. Which I don't think you send colonels into a combat zone. I don't know much about the military, but colonels are pretty high rank.
I think they're usually a little further back, right?
Like, yeah, like they're not frontline dudes. They send a grunt like Rambo in, maybe a captain or a lieutenant, like if you need something that like you're not sending a colonel in. He's basically a politician at that point. And anyway, he rescues Troutman. And they're in this standoff. The Russian army that is there in Afghanistan just like pulls up. They got tanks, they got helicopters, they got a battalion of people. And Rambo and Troutman are just like, they look at them, they're like, we're going to take them on ourselves. Like, what? And then out of the blue, like, all you hear is like some hooting. And they pan the camera over and just like this army of horses comes in, like the freedom fighters have decided to join the fray and push back the Russians. And then it becomes somehow Rambo gets a hold of a tank. He gets in this tank and then he plays chicken with the helicopter and wins. I guess he didn't win. He ran the tank into the helicopter and they both blow up and then he gets out of it. Like, in fact, that scene is hysterical to me because he drives it in and like the entire time Troutman's like, get out, John, get out. You got to get out now. And he blows it up and then he's all sad. And then Rambo like climbs out of the wreckage and I swear to God, Troutman rolls his eyes. Whatever. And that's it. Like, that's the movie. Then there's this weird, they throw up this flash card kind of on the screen, like talking about the freedom fighters of Afghanistan. And then at the end, it says dedicated to the people of Afghanistan.
The gallant people of yeah. Afghanistan. Yeah. I do remember that. That's about the only thing I remember, you know, outside of the things I've touched on. Like, you know, some of the stuff you're telling me, I'm like, I don't even remember that. Like, and it's like the huge big moments in this, and it's just,
yeah,
it's so funny because I remember when I saw this as a kid, I remember really disliking it and being disengaged in it. And I thought, and I also remember like, you know, I remember hearing some critic or something say like, oh, this is just full on stupid, dumb action movie. Now I'm like, no, that was two. This is dumb action movie, but it's also just, it's lame. Like, it's just not fun at all. Like two is, and it's weird, you know, like going back to it now, I thought, oh, maybe this is the undiscovered gem. Maybe, you know, I didn't get it when I was a kid. And I'll watch it now, and like I'll understand what's going on more, and I'll be more into it. It's just like, no, I guess, at least for me, I was right when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's pretty much with it. Like, I was like, for me, I was like 10 years old when this movie came out. I think it was actually the first Rambo I saw. I don't know. I don't have fond memories of it. Coming out of this one, it is definitely the worst. Of these movies, it may be one of the worst examples of like 80s action films period. Like, I remember watching like a lot of Jean-Claude Van Damme. Like, those movies are better than this. Some of them are bad. Like, some of them are bad movies, but they're more engaging, more entertaining than this. This is super flawed.
I would watch a bad Jean-Claude Van Damme over this any day. And it's just, I think I said to you, I was like, you know, two and three are kind of in the same vein. And it's like, I don't know why I would ever watch three over two. Like, 10 years from now, when I want to watch one of these movies again, it's going to be two. It ain't going to be three. Like, I'm never going to watch three again unless we're doing some fucking podcasts about it 10 years from now, which I hope to fucking God, I remember that this was a bad idea.
Yeah, you know, when it's like, what, in 10 years when we revisit Rambo because Sylvester Stallone has decided he too wants to revisit Rambo and has decided to make Last Blood Part 2.
Yeah, right.
More Last Blood.
If he's still kicking, I'm sure.
He'd be like 80 years old at that point.
So that's like kind of my final word on this movie. Again, I don't have a ton to say about it except boring, 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 boring. Not good. Rather watch two. I guess, are you ready to do scores on this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I wrote like a small mini review on like Letterboxd, and I most of the shit I talk about in there has nothing to do with anything. But I end it with, this film is bad. It's a bad movie. I'm going to give it 2 stars.
Yeah, I'm giving it the same for the reasons I said. It's a 2. Next week, we will finish up our rewatch of the series with Rambo. And you know what's weird? It's like, this movie did good at the box office and all that, but it would be, I think, 20 years until we got another one.
Yeah.
So there must have been some stink coming off this thing that, you know, not just us smelled. And it kind of just died.
Well, I think so it's like the budget was 63 million, something like that, 58 to 63 million, somewhere in there, estimated wise. But while it did make almost $200 million worldwide, it only made 53 here in the U.S. So
it was not a huge hit in the U.S.
And it was a U.S. Produced picture. At that point in time, like, a lot of the worldwide money, like, the split is not the same. Like, in the U.S., the studios get way more money from our theaters than overseas. So it's possible that this film actually lost money or made, like, a very
small profit. When you had it in marketing and all that, yeah.
And I do remember it being super heavily marketed.
Oh, yeah. And this is right around the time I think we were getting like video games of Rambo and shit.
Yeah.
But yeah. Hopefully Rambo 2008 fares better. I think it was 2008, around there. We'll cover that next week, and I guess we'll go see the fucking new one. I mean, at this point, I feel obligated to.
I need to see what this thing is. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I'm curious too. Like, what? Like, it looks really weird. I think I said it in a previous episode. It looks almost like cheap and not great. Like, it looks kind of bad to me.
You kind of look at like what like the series has evolved over time. Like, it's still a dumb action series for the most part, but like, you know, Rambo 2 and 3 are of a similar vein. 3 is nowhere near as good as 2, as we just discussed. But like 4, Rambo is, and I haven't rewatched it, but my remembering of it is like it was like this updated.
It's a new thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's still like, you know, Rambo is basically still a superhero, a giant cartoon action figure, but it had this more like visceral, like the violence was heavy. Mm-hmm. I remember from then, probably doesn't hold as well now. So I'm wondering what this other, cause that was 10 years ago. That was a decade ago that we got that last one. So what is this new film? I don't know.
I think it's going to be similar to Rambo a little bit, but we'll see. And we'll dig into Rambo more next week. Let's get into one of the big films of the year here that opened this last weekend. That is It Chapter 2. And I want to set the stage a little bit here first before, I mean, this is going to go all sorts of different directions. Anything you want to bring up or anything I can remember, we're going to dig into it.
Sure.
But like, just starting off to set the stage, I remember when It, you know, the first one came out, I think it was 2017.
That sounds right.
Yes. From what I recall, you loved it. I think you may have given it your film of the year that year.
That's possible, man. Like, I can look that up.
Okay. But you do remember loving it and giving it like 5 stars. Yeah. And I remember I liked it a lot. And it was exciting to me because we're getting like this kind of like big budget, like kind of epic horror, which is a new thing. And it's still, I think, kind of, it is the only thing really doing that, right?
Yeah.
So I like love that. But I remember walking away from it going, even at over 2 hours, it felt rushed. And I wish it had been like a HBO limited series or something where it's like 8 to 10 episodes. It gets to really breathe. And I just, like, it was fun for like this mass market, big like movie to go see. But like, I think that the material would just have worked better as a TV series.
Sure. I mean, when you look at that book, it's over 1,000 pages long. Like there's, it's a heavy novel. And it is a heavy thing to adapt. And I think they did a really good job with the first It from 2017. I thought it really worked with those kids.
I think another thing that first It did, though, is it backed itself into a corner because Andy Muschietti's approach with these films was to do it almost chronologically, and so the first film was almost exclusively, I think it was exclusively, like, just them as the kids in the 80s. Yep.
Yes.
And that's the stronger element of the story. It's the more fun thing to see, and it's the more, like, cinematic thing, and it's like, hey, kids on bikes in the 80s and all that, and kids fighting a monster. It's just,
it's fun. There's a sense of adventure to it. You know, Stranger Things, it was, I don't think season two had premiered at that point, but like season one was out and like people were really into that. And this even had, you know, Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things was in it. And there was something to like latch onto there with, like, it's fun. Like the Goonies are fun. Like kids on an adventure are fun. And then to tack on to that, like, this terrifying monster,
it's scarier with them fighting the, you know,
yeah,
it's the easier part to do, and they did it, like, instead of doing it how kind of like the miniseries did, or how I never read the whole book, but it's been forever since I read a lot of it, you know. I think I gave up somewhere near the halfway point in the book too when I was a kid. You know, instead of doing it that way, like, and Muschietti's like, he took all the easy good stuff kind of in the first one, and now for chapter two, it's like 27 years later, and these kids are adults now. This new one does jump back and forth, which is weird. I think it might be because they realize, well, fuck, we can't have it just be all the adults all the time.
Well, yeah, well, I think there's two reasons here. Like, one of the reasons I heard was that they weren't sure that, like, while it was a big budget movie, they were not 100% like sure that they had a hit on their hands. Like,
the first one,
like, you figure like that the budget for the first one was only $35 million.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it looks amazing. Like, it looks a great film, and they spent the money in the right areas, but they were not sure that they were going to have a film that ultimately like grossed $700 million worldwide. Like, that was not expected. So they weren't even sure they were going to get to do a chapter two. So they took the good stuff and threw that into that first one. Like, let's do the stuff that's best. And hey, if it works, then we can cast for the second one. Cause they had not cast chapter two.
Yeah.
At the time of that first one.
And one other thing I want to kind of stuff here before we really kind of dig in on chapter two is, like, going into it, I'd seen reviews and there was kind of a bad vibe around it going in anyways. Like, when critics go see a movie at a film festival, they come out of it just like usually like really overhyping films on Twitter.
Yeah.
They came out of this one very muted and I was like, oh no. And then the reviews came out. And it's interesting because if you just saw Twitter and you just saw a lot of the critics that I follow and stuff, you'd think that this thing was total dog shit, and you wouldn't, I think you'd be surprised if you went on Rotten Tomatoes and saw that it had, at least last I checked, it had a fresh rating. It's like, I think, at least when I checked it, it was at 66%. And it's weird because, like, I think that this movie is very flawed, and we'll get into it. But I think I kind of fall in that 66% that, like, I appreciated it. Like, and I've recognized that what they had to do with this one is a much harder task than the first one. So, like, I came away, like, for me, like, I came away liking a lot of it and, like, appreciating parts of it. And there, like, there's nuggets of brilliance in there, I thought. There was enough where I wasn't walking out of this thing like, that fucking sucked. I don't know. How about you? Like, again, you're coming from someone, you thought that the first one was great. Yeah.
I really liked it. I did look. It was my number three film for 2017.
Okay, I don't know why. What was your number one?
Logan.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good call. Good call.
But yeah, so coming coming into this, I was pretty pumped. Like, I really liked the first it, and I left this one going, I like that movie. Like, I liked it.
Yeah,
I did not love it. It was not my, you know, it's not my favorite film of the year. It's not anywhere close. But I liked it. I did not, you know, dislike the fact that I went and saw this movie.
Yeah, I think part of it for me was maybe just seeing some of the negative reaction and the way people kind of talked about it, that when I saw it and it mostly holds it together and it has, like, really good stuff in it, I was like, that was okay. I didn't hate my time in the theater, although I did feel the time in the theater this time. Like,
yeah, I checked my watch at one point, which is weird. Like I certainly don't like doing that in a movie theater. Cause like, I don't have a watch. I check my phone. And I don't want to disturb anybody. and like, so yeah, I was like, what fucking time is it? Cause this is still going. And it feels like, and I was right. Like, I was only at that point about 2 hours in, there was still a good chunk of film left to go.
Yeah, I had to get up a couple times and step out and went into the bathroom of the theater and vaped.
I could see that.
But, like, one of the times when I got up and I went out, my girlfriend's like, she whispers to me, like, is this thing almost over? And I'm like, I don't know. I think it might be. And then when I went to the bathroom, I looked at the time and I did, you know, some of the math. And I did the trailer math in my head. I'm like, okay, there's a half-hour trailer. This movie's about 3 hours long. Doing the math, I'm like, same as you, it was about 2 hour mark. I'm like, there's still a fucking full hour. And I came back and told her that. And I think the way that the movie is, it didn't need to be that long. I think you could have justified that length with some better shit. But like,
yeah, they make some weird choices.
A huge chunk of the middle is everyone splits up and goes on their fetch quest. Like, that's like the heart of this film.
Yep.
And some of it's good. Like, I kind of like the individual scenes.
Some of them.
But I'm like, when you stack them all together, it starts to feel very repetitive and long. And maybe there was a way they could have cut it where, like, you're intercutting between the – like, because it'll just do Jessica Chastain. She goes – you know, Beverly. She goes to this apartment and there's this – she has an encounter with Pennywise. Then we go to someone else and what are they doing? And it's like, maybe if they would have, like, cut from her showing up at a place and then cut to, like, Bill Hader showing up at a place. And you know what I mean? Like, cut the scenes together like right. that a little bit more. Where it kind of flows more instead of we do a full scene with this character. Now we're going to go do the same scene with another character. And that comprises like a huge chunk of this running time. Did you feel that way too about like that part? Like that, I think it's like the biggest, I think this film starts pretty strong, like really strong actually. And we'll get into that. And then ends, like, I liked the ending a lot. Like, there's a lot of things I liked about the ending, and we'll get into that.
Yeah, it's that middle piece, though. It is that fetch quest piece. And, like, here's the reality is that some of these characters are not as interesting as others, yet all of them are getting the same kind of screen time here. Like, they're all getting that moment. They're all getting that scene to go through and explore their past and, you know, figure out what their totem is for this ritual or whatever. And, like, I'm sorry, I don't really care about the fat kid who's now, like, a hunk and an engineer and shit. Like, I don't, like,
I found James McAvoy. I found him, like, wasted almost. Like, I'm like, what is McAvoy doing here? He's not doing much.
Right, like, he goes and buys a, like, we'll get into this. He goes and buys a bike at this, like, used
that part I love.
Store. But, like, that's what he did. Like, that's what he does. He goes and does that, and, like, he then talks to a kid, like,
he separates himself from everybody and is in this funhouse at one point. I'm just like, what? Why did we need this funhouse shit? Like, right. What did we need,
like,
that for?
It's a really cool looking scene, but it, like, in terms of what it adds to the film, like, it doesn't do anything. We already know Pennywise is bad. We already know that he's trying to, you know, get back at these adults now, through fear. Like, that's how he lives. He eats fear and he wants them to be scared. There's, like, while it's a really cool looking scene and like Pennywise is, like, you know, cracking the glass, and there's no need for it. And that's what I felt with, like, a lot of this. Like, I liked, like I liked that scene. I like the
cool
scene
on its own. Yeah.
I like the scene in Beverly's apartment, right? And like, she's there with the old lady. Like, it's a wonderful scene. Like, that old lady does some awesome acting. She's super creepy, and, you know, how they interact, and, like, we're seeing stuff that Bev's not seeing, and when it finally, like, amounts, like, it comes out, and, like, you know, Pennywise kind of attacks her. It's this awesome, super tense scene, but it's also, is it really necessary? Like, we already know that she's damaged. We already know that she's, like, gone through emotional trauma, and I don't think it adds anything to have her separated from the rest of them. Cause when this film is at its best is when they're all together.
Yeah, I think so. I think some of the best stuff is, you know, kind of them coming back together after not seeing each other for so long, and what that's like to, I don't know. I think that's all, like, some of the strongest stuff is like the friendship, the way you kind of forget things from your youth and, or block things out. Like, but
it was, like, I thought they did a great job with that scene. Like, it felt natural, right? Like, yes, their memory loss is unnatural, but it felt natural how they started remembering things. Like, you know, you're just talking with, like, old friends.
And the way you'll kind of slip back into the old roles that you haven't played, you know what I mean? Like, they'll start just making fun of each other about the same shit that they, from 20, like, I don't know, that shit's, like, more interesting. Again, these fetch quest scenes, maybe they could have worked in a longer TV series, or, like, it's just like when you're trying to cram so much stuff in here and this is 3 hours already, like, this stuff is not adding a lot.
No.
So one thing that, you know, it's kind of a controversial scene, and I'll see how you feel about it or whatever, is the opening of the film starts with, like, a hate crime where there's a gay couple, they're at a carnival, and these bullies kind of show up and beat the hell out of them and basically leave them for dead. Like, they throw the one guy off a bridge, and then Pennywise shows up and gets him. And to me, I don't know. Again, I'm not gay, so I'm not an authority on this or anything, but, like, I wasn't offended that they put that in there. It wasn't like they were saying this was a good thing. They were saying it was bad, you know, and I even saw someone say on Twitter that, like, there's audiences that are laughing at that scene, and I didn't experience that at all with my audience. I think my audience was, like, horrified by what they were seeing. It's, like, a shocking opening to the film. And it's weird. I think it would feel less, like, just shock for shock's sake if they did something with that angle, because, like, I feel like an angle of the story, and it was in the miniseries as well, was, like, there's a rot in the town. Like, there's a moral rot to the town. It's bigotry, right? And I think like even the first film kind of did a better job showing like how each of the kids, like their own lives are being affected by their fucked up parents and whatnot. But it's like, you have this opening where there's this gay bashing incident, and it's like, we never come back to like, is there something wrong with the town? Like, you know,
they never explore the town, right? Like it's this film and the previous film, although, as you said, it does it a little better in the previous film, but this is wholly about these characters. And one of the things, and this is why sometimes Stephen King's stuff does not translate well to film, is that a lot of his stuff does revolve around the geography. Like, it's just there's something rotten in the core of these communities that he writes about. And it's not always, it's not necessarily like a villain. Like, it's not these four kids that beat up this gay couple and throw one over the bridge and leave him for dead. It's that the town itself is rotten.
And the town, like in the miniseries, they touch on the fact that the town will turn its back on stuff like that. Like, people just kind of mind their own business, you know? And there's none of that here. You could easily cut some of the fetch quest shit to, like, I think if you add that stuff to this film, it's a much stronger film.
I think it is too, and I think they left this in there. So this is straight from the book too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
they left this in there because it ties into another character's, like, his fetch quest and his secret, and
yeah,
it's supposed to be the corollary for that, right? Is like, that he experienced this, that could have very easily been him if he wasn't living a closeted existence. They don't do a good job with that.
I don't think they connect the dots on that enough. I do think, let me ask you this. How do you feel that they handled, just like, isolate, take away the hate crime at the beginning or whatever, but just Bill Hader's character?
Like, I think he's great.
Do you like how they handled that, you know, quote unquote, like, secret about him?
I think it's a little too subtle. It's there. Like, it's very, like, I mean, I think once Pennywise is like yelling at him in the park at Richie, like, you know what the secret is at that point. Like, it's not hidden anymore, but they had scenes previous to that. Like, you see, Richie and what's his name, Ben or Eddie.
Yeah, Eddie.
Like, they're in the hammock together, and like, you see like Richie kind of like, there's a weird scene. Like, it did not correlate for me at first, but I caught it after the Richie's fetch quest scene in the park. It's like, they're in this hammock, and Richie's like playing footsies with Eddie. Like, it's just like, it's, there's like these weird, like, little subtle hints that things are going on. And then there's the whole thing in the movie theater at the arcade. But that, I think, is that piece was actually handled way too subtle. Like, it's just been like, hey, do you want to play? Like, I'll buy you another, like, I don't know. I've done that. Like, you meet like a somebody at, you know, you meet like somebody, maybe you kind of know, you're playing a game at the arcade or whatever, and like, he's getting ready to leave, and you're like, yo, like,
yeah, let's play another game. That's something. But then the dude does, like, the other kid like freaks out about it, like, you're gay, and you know, starts calling him slurs and stuff, and I'm like,
that was weird. Like I didn't get that, like. And maybe that was,
I think that's to let you know. That's to let you know that he's gay. But it's like, that's the kind of thing that kids would say to each other even if he's not. Like, you know what
I, right. Like, I just took that as like, that,
he's just
that
an kid, asshole. Yeah.
That kid's fine until his friends show up or his older brother shows up. And then he needs to be the tough kid. And it's like, he can't hang out with the dork. So he like calls him, you know, homophobic slurs. And because that's what asshole kids do. But it is accurate to life. Like, that's how they act.
I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, like, all sorts of homophobic slurs were very, very common up until like very recently, actually. So it's like, but I took it, you know, this movie's coming out in 2019. So when the kid did start saying that, I made a mental note. I'm like, well, is Bill Hader gay? I forgot his character's name now.
Richie.
I'm like, is Richie gay? So like, I had that question mark. I had that note in my head. But it's funny because when we get to the end and it's kind of revealed that he was in love with Eddie, I totally missed it. And my girlfriend was like, oh, so I guess, you know, he was in love with Eddie, like, after the movie. I was like, oh, is that what that was? I thought he was just recarving old shit that the whole group did. But it was like, you know, basically...
He had left it blank. He had gone to, like, where they, you know, they carved names in, because he never actually expressed his...
Yeah.
His love for Eddie. I don't know. I thought the scene in the park with Pennywise, like, yelling at him about what his dirty little secret was...
And I thought... Honestly, I thought that was one of the best scenes in the movie.
Yeah, but I thought that was where it was like, oh, he's gay.
That's when you picked up. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did there too, because I was like, he's like, you got a dirty little secret and this and that. I'm like, okay. But like, I guess the movie's never overt with his gayness, I guess. But like, there's people that complain about it, but I'm like, I think that's a good, like, I like the way they handled it, where it's like, he's not overacting that he's gay, you know. It's just like it's a part of him, and something that he's hidden in the secret. And I thought like that romantic angle, like the way, you know, once I understood what had happened at the very end, I was like, that was like a really sweet thing. I thought, and I thought that like I it was one of my favorite things about the movie. I've seen, I won't say her name, but I saw a critic say that. You know, a character's homosexuality isn't a plot twist. Like, you know, like, I'm like, I guess I could see what you're saying, but I didn't feel it.
Well, I didn't think it was.
I didn't take it that way. And I didn't take it as a plot twist.
Yeah, I didn't take it as a plot twist either. It is a piece of his character. His character is closeted. He is a closeted gay man. And that is something that is hard for people to deal with. Like
it feels natural to his story and not like as a, ooh, guess what, this is the big twist at the end. And like I don't agree with what she said. Again, I don't even know if she's gay or not. I have no idea, but I just, you know, people want to find stuff to attack and everything, and I guess you can, but I'm like, I, you know, I think that the representation of him as a gay character, I think it's something that is to be applauded here, maybe, and it's better than it would have been handled even 5 years ago, probably. So I really like that part. Again, I'm defending it as a straight white man, but
yeah,
I liked it.
I thought it was fine. Like I was not like offended by it. If somebody is, they're more, you know, whatever, you're allowed to be offended by it. It's fine.
You're allowed to have your opinion about it. But for me personally, I thought it worked, and I thought it was one of the strengths of the film. And I think Bill Hader is one of the strengths of the
film. He is, yes, very much so. He is a highlight here. He's probably the most, to me at least, he's the most likable character. Which is funny because I did not like Richie in the first one. I thought he was kind of more of an asshole. And, like, you know, I associated more with Bill, who James McAvoy plays in this one, than I did with Richie in the first one. But in this one, it's like, I don't know, Bill Hader is just like, he's very personable and very charismatic.
He kind of steals the show. I think they maybe even may have beefed up his role from how good he was in it. Yeah. I think one of my bigger characters, kind of from both, is Beverly as well. I like her.
Yeah.
I think Jessica Chastain isn't given a ton to do here, but
which is a shame because Bev is such a major character in the first film.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, not that, you know, she's not a major character here, but she's kind of takes a back seat to Bill and Richie, who kind of like drive most of the narrative here.
You know, while we were kind of on political topics in this film, let's touch on one other. What did you think of the Native American thing?
Eh.
It's complaint I've heard, and I get it, and I understand, is that it's like a trope, the magical, you know, the magical Native American or whatever.
Sure.
And it's something that's kind of from Stephen King's works, like, you know, it's in Pet Sematary kind of too, right?
Yeah, I mean, he pulls from natural resources, like, and some of you know, for as wrong or not, but for white people in general, like, in America, like, Native Americans are a fascinating culture to a lot
there's
of
a
us.
Mythology to it,
yeah, and they have a more interesting culture. You know, that does not kind of relate to the Anglo-Saxon, you know, lifestyle and culture that historically most people in America have followed. So it is this more mystical, exotic thing. And yeah, maybe it is a little cheap to kind of throw that in there, but this book was written back in the 80s too.
That's one point I wanted to definitely touch on, but I have some personal expertise that I could throw into this as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no expert on Native Americans, but I do know a thing or two about psychedelics. And, you know, while it is a trope that they're using here, it's not untrue that this is like a fake thing. Like, yeah, psychedelics are used in ceremonies.
Yes.
Ayahuasca is legal in the United States for religious ceremony. And so... And the type of, you know, ceremony that's depicted here, it's a real thing. It happens. It happens in the U.S. It happens in the Amazon. There's people that actually pay to go, like, on trips to go to have an ayahuasca spiritual journey. And, you know, while it might not sound scientific or anything, there are people who believe that there is something kind of magical and mysterious to psychedelics. Like, you're, you know, if you've ever done one, you do feel like a window to the actual universe has opened up to you, at least while you're on it, right?
Right.
So all of these things, like, yes, it's a trope and all that, but, like, it's not something that's pure fiction. Let me put it that way, okay? Like, I'm no expert on which Native American tribes do what or whatever, but... You know, religious ceremonies or spiritual ceremonies that involve psychedelics are a real thing. And as a personal, like, kind of advocate for psychedelics myself, like, it just kind of, like, makes me kind of tickled to see all these movies that came out this year where it's like psychedelics are like this huge focal point of the plot. And that's kind of here too, where it's like, that's how, what is it, Mike figures out how they have to beat it. But at all of that said, if you say you don't like the Native American element to this, I get it. You know,
I get it. Yeah, like,
but just to me, again, like, I'm coming from a completely weird left field angle where I'm like, oh, it's cool to see some representation of something I know about in a movie. Fuck, man, where else to go with this? Like, we've touched on, like, the controversial things. Like, what about the scares? I am one of the people that, like, I actually think both of these films, like, It and It Chapter 2, are pretty scary, I think. Like,
there's some great scary scenes. Like, there is a wonderful scene that takes place under these bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
That is
terrifying. I'll never forget that scene. Yeah, like...
Straight up terrifying.
Yeah, like... No matter what faults there are with Chapter 2, it's like, that one scene is pretty magical. Like, it's pretty great. This girl goes under the bleachers, and he's, like, kind of sitting there in the dark, and he's luring her and telling her he's going to take away... Was it? She's, like, a birthmark on her face or something?
Yep.
And, you know, all, like... And then she does, like, he shows up a lot as, like, these different kind of, like, CG creature things. And... Again, like I said at the top of this, like, one of the things I like about these two movies and the fact that they were, like, these at least mid-budgeted, big theatrical releases is it does feel like the Lord of the Rings for horror films or something, where it's like, oh, we get some cool big special effects shit, like Paul Bunyan running around and fucking, you know, chasing people, or, like, these crazy-looking monsters. And for what it is, I think it's, like, a lot of people are like, it's bad jump scares. I think... the scares in this film are very much like it going and running at the camera. Like, I think that stuff is all for mainstream big scares, like, pretty good.
Yeah.
I dig it. Do you agree with that too?
Yeah, I think it works.
I don't know. I feel like I've touched on a lot of the things. I know. Well, can't forget Stephen King.
Yeah, let's briefly touch on him. He is who Mike buys the bike from, and it's this extended scene. It's a kind of a longer cameo, but Stephen King plays a shopkeeper, and he recognizes who Mike is. Mike is, you know, Bill. Bill has become this a successful screenwriter, novelist, but he has a tendency to write shitty endings, which I thought was kind of amusing, because as much as I love Stephen King, and there are some books that are near perfect, he has a tendency to not know how to end shit.
And it's like this long running joke that happens like several times throughout the film, you know? And then to get Stephen King to say it himself, it's just a nice weekend nod for the fans, because, you know, all the fans know that about that criticism of King. And also, I thought, like, one, when I saw him as, like, this antique shopkeeper in Maine, I was like, you know what? This is probably what he would be doing if he was not fucking Stephen King. Like, right. If he never fucking made it. And two, I thought, like, his, you know, performance for what it is, it was fine. Like, I didn't think it stuck out as a sore thumb as someone who's not.
No, I thought it was fun. Like, it was a fun scene. Like, and maybe that's where some people have a problem with it, is that it is fun. It's not like, it's not this super serious scene. I've heard people complain about some of the humor. Like,
I've heard people say it's too jokey.
It has too much humor. Like, I don't know. That worked for me. Like, I thought the jokes landed. I thought they were funny. I thought on the reverse side that the film was effective in building tension when it needed to. I enjoyed Stephen King's appearance. I enjoyed the kind of like little poke at him, and like a wink to him that he acknowledges. Yeah, sometimes I am not good at writing endings. And it notoriously, not a great ending. So,
is there anything else you wanted to touch on, or
no? I mostly liked it. Like, I thought it was a solid conclusion to the story. I think, like, I have a lot of the same, you know, issues that you do with kind of how it was presented, but I don't know. I think, you know, in terms of how it works, I think it mostly does. Like, it's overall, I think it's a good 5-hour journey. But you're probably right. It probably needed another 3 or 5 hours to really flesh that stuff out and kind of explore Derry as a town, explore some of the other character motivations. Like, there's this weird, what the hell's his name? I'm drawing a blank on who the guy is, but he gets locked away early on, and Pennywise busts him out of this
insane
asylum, and it's like there's like a tie there, but like there's not enough exploration of that as a character, so it just seems weird. Like,
wasn't he the bully from the first one?
He was. Yeah, he's the bully from the first one, and he shows up in a
flashback.
Yeah, it's weird because like he doesn't have a conclusion. It's just that story ends,
and that's again that feels like something to me that they should have cut. It stuck out like a sore thumb. I really didn't like that shit here. I liked him in the first film, but like it just came off as cartoonish that he's like fucking Michael Myers now and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, overall, I think we're both kind of landing in a similar spot with this. You'll never be able to convince me that this shouldn't have been an HBO series. But if this is what we're going to get, I'm like, you know, I didn't hate this one. I don't think it's as good as the first one. I think it had a lot to overcome to even come close to that, I think. But you know what? If it is still fun to me, despite the fact that I don't think this is what it should be. it's fun to me to get a big event horror film in the theaters. You know?
Yeah.
So I gotta take the silver linings out of what I think is the wrong way to adapt this, and go, you know what? It's still cool that we got this like big hit of a horror movie with these big effects, and that's it's a big deal, and people are going out to see.
And it's mostly good.
And it is like that's the thing. It's like I don't like this as much as the first one. I didn't love the first one either. I thought the first one was pretty good, and this one I think is like hugely flawed, but I didn't hate it. So I'm landing at a 3 on it, Chris.
That's where I'm at. It has issues, and it does come down to the nature of how they presented the story, the choices they made, and you know, doing that first one, which just ended up being the stronger of the two because kids are more fun to explore. They're easier to scare. They're more innocent, so their terror is more innocent. What they're scared of is
it's more raw. Like,
yeah. Like, whereas like, you know, you're not really exploring what these guys are scared of. And even if you were, it wouldn't be scary. Like it's like it's adult problems are different from kid problems.
And,
it doesn't necessarily make for a good exploration of fear, which that first one was. It was just, it was a great exploration of fear, and but for this, it's still solid. It's still fun to watch. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I will probably watch it again at some point. I don't know. I can't really complain. I'm glad that somebody invested in doing, you know, the film like this, and that we got two of them. Like, much like you, I'm happy that somebody is putting stuff like this out there.
Yeah. You know, and I probably will myself, you know, some Halloween. Every Halloween I do 31 days of horror movies. I'm sure there will be a year where I program one and two back-to-back nights, you know. For next week, we're going to have Rambo. And I am going to have Tigers Are Not Afraid. It's a new horror film that is a Shudder exclusive, but you know, if you don't have Shudder, you could check your theaters. It is playing in some theaters. I know I have a friend who did go see it in a theater. I will say this, like slight spoiler or whatever here. I often say, like, you know, this thing is not a reason to get Shudder, but if you have Shudder, check it out. I will say this, if you don't have Shudder, Tigers Are Not Afraid is a reason to get it, but I'll be reviewing that next week, and I'm gonna maybe try to see Hustlers, Chris. My interest is peaked in Hustlers.
I thought the trailer looked fun.
Yeah,
when I saw it, I just checked Rotten Tomatoes today, and I was like, "Holy shit, this thing is you know,
it's getting good reviews too." Yeah.
Like, I think it's like right now it's like at 89% positive. Like, that's fucking nuts. It's like, all right. I mean, I like the cast. I don't know if I'm going to actually get out to see it, but
I'm going to try.
I like the idea of this movie.
Have you seen the trailer for Tigers Are Not Afraid?
I have not seen the trailer for. Ooh, we're getting some echo there. I have not seen that.
Watch that trailer. And if you get a chance, watch the movie. Like I said, I've seen it already, and I loved it, and it's also really short.
Okay. All right,
so we'll be back next week with at least Rambo, and I will at least have a review of Tigers Are Not Afraid, but maybe we'll get to see Hustlers too.
Yep.
So come back next week.
Movie dudes.